Well, I don't, but I hope that other people do. I mean, I think it's a pretty there's more than one like whatever article or interview that's introduced me as kind of a zealot of rock. And I think that's, that's totally cool. I'm like, boy, I've just worked on being versatile, et cetera. And but I keep just putting more and more stuff out there, hoping that somebody goes, wow, this guy's completely out of his mind. This is great. Some artists are really, there's like Scott Walker who, really picks and chooses when to put something out and is always high quality, super interesting, a huge leap forward, et cetera. I'm just on a different path, clearly. I mean, I like to do a lot of different things. I'm probably a little less focused than many artists, but that's just because I have got a voracious appetite for doing things, and I just love to put myself in new situations all the time. I'm really comfortable being thrown into something where I have to like figure it all out and nail it down and make it into something cool.
You do a lot of producing nowadays. We've got a common friend, and you produced her, Hannah Gillespie, which was an amazing coincidence. But do you find the producing side of it just as enjoyable as the performing side?
Well, I have to say that varies highly, because it's not, performing, it's up to me. Whereas, with the production stuff, I have to work with the artists, and they're at all different levels. Sometimes I've worked with people who, have a lot of experience and are really fluid, and sometimes I've worked with people who are just really starting out and need a lot of guidance. I think it's the most painstaking. I mean, for me, like doing a performance is just like it's very easy. It really comes out naturally, and that's great, especially when, it lights a similar fire in the audience.
As a producer, you would be influencing the people you're producing a lot too. And Hannah mentioned that you jumped on and played some instruments with her when you were producing. Do you find you do that a lot and join in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm producing a lot of solo artists. Probably, I would say probably like 4 to 1 solo artists over bands. And therefore, yeah, I mean, there are albums where I played every instrument.
Now, going back, we're going to go back a bit. Look, I was trying to find out how you and John Auer met, and I've read differing stories. One of them, of course, said that you met at a Dan Reed Network gig. And I know it's not true, but it sparked my interest because I was like, Dan Reed Network? I love Dan Reed Network. They're one of my favorite bands back in the late 80s, early 90s. But, of course, you've debunked that myth since then.
Next year will be 30 years since John and I started the band, but actually John and I met and worked on music even before that, so we've already been working together for well over 30 years, because we were 14 and 13 when we first played in a band together in this little town called Bellingham, Washington, somewhere between Seattle and Vancouver, Canada. So we, other than our parents and John's sibling, there are no longer relationships in our lives. Like we have, been through all kinds of episodes, all kinds of ups and downs, being close, being very distant, liking each other, not liking each other, over those years. And that right there is, an interesting, it's a source of material. There's lots of songs we've written about each other, the classic FU kind of songs, and kind of, not quite so FU kind of songs, like being a bit sad about the FU song. Or FU state of things.
How often do you see each other now? Because of course you recorded this album in separate continents, right?
No, that's not exactly true, because now both John and I are living overseas, so we did not record in the same room ever on this record, which is quite amusing. But we are not on different continents. That was, kind of a novel, 2016 way to make a record, with just files moving around. But, we were on tour a lot this year, and I have to say that, especially after what we've been through in the last year, where, people in our band died, et cetera, not to make light of it, but not to dwell on it too much, because it's just too much to dwell on. But, we have a new drummer, Frankie Siragusa, who plays on the album and actually mixed some of the album, and, he's great guy, great musician. But basically, we spent a lot of time on the road this year together, you know, two solid months,
yeah,
nonstop, and we had a great time. You know, it was, I think having Frankie, who's not only new, but he's just, you know, he's the right balance for all of us, and the psychology is very good in the band these days.
What if I take you back to the heady days of the late 80s and 90s? Of course, you were signed to a Geffen label, which was the same one that had Guns N' Roses, Nirvana, Sonic Youth, Urge, Overkill. Thinking back to those days, did it mean a lot at the time?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, we were just trying to, you know, bail the boat as quick as we could. We were, you know, definitely, we went from something that was extremely DIY, you know, our first record, was something that we made in... Well, except that, like the new record, we made it in a home studio, you know, on 8-track analog tape, a studio that John and his dad had put together in their house for kicks. And we made this little record there and did everything ourselves and made it, pressed, well, I mean, copied our own cassettes and had the labels printed and, you know, put the stickers on the cassettes and all that jive. And took them around to record stores and radio stations and dropped them off on consignment, all this kind of thing. We went from something super DIY to, like, in 1 year having an enormous record deal. Just we had some radio success with that humble cassette, and radio success is something that will bring a major label around very quickly. And we had, before our first gig, we had, like, letters from because, yeah, people sent letters in those days to our P.O. box, you know, from EMI. And then things carried on for another year while we were kind of just getting our act together and getting our feet wet playing gigs. And then we got this big record deal. And, you know, and it's Geffen, not only the label of all the bands that you just mentioned, but in the States, the label of XTC, who are, like, you know, our quirky pop heroes.
Yeah, right.
So we just couldn't believe our fortune. But, you know, as I've said in many interviews, we went from literally a $50 budget for the first record to a $250,000 budget for the next one. And that was just, it was very difficult to handle.
What did you do with that money? You know,
the expectations, et cetera, are all there. But we were just so, like, from a musical point of view, like, what do we do? Like, how do we do this? So we, you know, we worked with John Leckie, who had just done the Stone Roses album, and we loved, because guess what? He worked with XTC and the Dukes of Stratosphere, as well as he worked with Pink Floyd and John Lennon, and as a younger engineer, more down the chain of command, but as a producer, he worked some cool records and brought him to Seattle and set up in a studio that we liked. And then, you know, he was like, well, we need just a couple of things. And then, you know, pretty soon we're renting an entire API mixing console and Fairchild limiters and stuff being flown up from LA and having techs rewire a whole studio inside the studio that we were already working in, this kind of thing. You know, and there was still money left over. That's how big the budget was, you know, like, and we mixed at a big fancy studio in LA, et cetera. And we had our living expenses and all these things. Attorney fees for the record deal had to be paid as well. I mean, we still came in, like, under budget.